We are going on tour. The Glamorous Trash Podcast and my book tour have collabed, and we're coming to a city near you. Click the link in the show notes to get all of the deets. We're coming to New York City on June 4th. We are kicking off an event with Jon Stewart. No big deal. That's our very first show in New York City. Then we're coming to Washington, D.C., Nashville, Chicago, Santa Fe, Albuquerque, Seattle, Portland, and Los Angeles. So get your tickets now. We are doing three different events because, you know, I'm always doing the most. That's just on brand, right? First, there's a Glamorous Trash Party. It's the podcast meets the book tour meets Coachella, a live show featuring podcast segments, book segments, a very special guest. And of course, there's a runway walk at the end for people to show off their fits because the dress code to every event is obviously glamorous trash. We are also doing a Cookie Country Club. It's the anti-country club country club. And it's very dreamy. You get like a bunch of products. There's little events. And it's a more intimate event where you meet other cookies and listen to a book chat with what, me and another special guest. And then the final event, the Behind the Bangs Writing Workshop. I finally did it, put together this workshop because I wrote this book in many ways for younger me. And younger me would not have gotten off her couch unless there was also a workshop being taught. I wanted the gems. I wanted the knowledge. I wanted the education. That's what I would have wanted. So I've decided I'm doing it. And in the workshop is going to be the six writing gems that took me forever to learn. 15 years. In my 15-year career as a TV writer and author and blah, 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 all the other things I've written, there are six things that I always use. And all of those are in this workshop. So if you have an interest in writing, sign up. All the ticket links are live today. Click the show notes. Click my Instagram. We are coming to a city near you. And there's going to be some meet and greets. I'll sign some copies of books. We'll give out more books. And I have some pieces of merch that I'm taking on the road. And I'm going to give them out at the shows. Welcome to Glamorous Trash. This is a celebrity memoir podcast where we dig into all of the glamour and all of the trash. If you have ever referenced Mariah Carey in therapy, then this is probably the podcast for you. I'm your host, Chelsea Devantes. I'm a TV writer, comedian, and filmmaker, and soon to be author, and sometimes I'm in stuff too. And this is a Glamorous Trash Talk episode where we take a little tangent, talk about another author. We're doing a book talk episode where I am going to talk to an author whose book is coming out in March this month, and I'm going to ask five questions I would love to be asked and five questions I would hate to be asked and see what happens. Let's dive in. Our guest today is a multi-genre writer, artist, podcast host, and producer, facilitator, and international educator. She serves as the co-executive producer of Young Women Empowered. She's authored various books, but her latest, Still True, The Evolution of an Unexpected Journalist, is coming in March 2024 through Hinton Publishing. Please welcome Reagan Jackson.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for being here. I am going to dive right in with my first question. Ooh, it's a tough one, Reagan. Get ready.
Okay.
Tell me about your book. Give me the hot pitch.
Okay. So Still True is a hybrid book. So it's part memoir where I talk a bit about my choices around becoming a journalist, like why it was unexpected, all of that. And then the rest of it is kind of a time capsule of articles and essays talking about everything from gentrification to movement building, Black Lives Mattering, like joy is resistance, international issues, all sorts of stuff.
I love that so much. And yeah, reading just your chapter headings in the beginning, one of your chapter titles was, "Do Black Lives Matter in Seattle as much as tacos do?" was like, this is amazing. And yeah, just going through all of them, it's like Michelle Obama ain't the only a fantastic woman of color, into chapters like about reparations and Barbie and Beyonce, and the second to last one, $25 foot massage, which honestly sounds really good right now. Okay, question two. Your book comes from a very special publisher, and I know this because Maggie, who is a cookie, sent me the most compelling email about having you on the podcast. I loved it. And she told me about Hinton Publishing, whose tagline is a publishing house focused on historically uninvited communities. So my question for you is, tell me about the journey that led you to Hinton. Like, did you go to other places? What was it like working with them? And just kind of the publishing landscape as a whole and how you found your home.
Okay. So first I have to make a confession.
Please.
So this is a new book, but it's also a second edition. So the first edition of the book was originally called Still Here and is a, you know, South End mixtape is a whole cool thing. And we put it out during the pandemic and it was, I felt, a light that shined for no one because the pandemic happened. And so there was no,
nothing.
So fast forward. Marcus Harrison Green, who's a journalist, a friend, just somebody I've known in community for a long time, who, fun fact, was also one of my writing students.
Wow, I love that.
Yeah, he approached me about the book and he's like, you know, that was a really great book. Like, would you ever consider re-releasing it, but with more essays, just, you know, zhuzh it up a bit? Like, you want a second crack at it? And I was like, oh, second chances.
Yeah.
Yeah, I need that.
We all need second chance. I need seventh, eighth, and ninth chances. Yes, we love that.
For real. So, you know, through this process, we've decided to give that book a new life. So it's got a new title, a new cover. It's 8 more essays than the previous book and a foreword from Robin D.G. Kelly. And for me, it was like a no-brainer because I've been working with Marcus for years as he put together the South Seattle Emerald. A lot of the pieces that I wrote for this book were originally published in the South Seattle Emerald. But also, like, when I talk about my journey into writing generally and, like, why I wanted to talk about my community and use a platform to really elevate our voices, it just is in exact alignment with the spirit of Hinton Publishing.
Yeah, and how did you find Hinton Publishing? Or did they find you?
They found me. So Marcus, Maggie, and Vlad are the three people who run Hinton Publishing.
Okay, wait. So your former writing student started his own publishing house. That's incredible. I wasn't connecting it. And he worked at this paper. Okay. That's cool. And is this Hinton's first book?
I'm number one.
Okay, no pressure. That is really exciting. It's so cool for them to enter the market and for this to be a place and for your book to be their debut. You're the little debutante. This is the debutante ball.
I'm very honored. I'm absolutely honored to be chosen to be first. And I'm in a really great cohort.
Okay. So you talk a lot about journalism. Obviously you are a journalist. And so the format of book talks, 5 questions I would love to be asked, 5 questions I would hate to be asked. Here's your next question. Mm-hmm. Who's the worst journalist out there right now?
Oh no. Well, it's not me.
That's right.
So more reasons to read this book.
Okay. Answer accepted. Okay. Question 4. You write very compellingly about trolls, specifically their threat to journalism. Why are trolls a threat to journalism?
I think trolls are a threat to journalism because trolls are a threat to free thinking and to free expression. And if you're going to get crapped on every time you write a thing or try to get other people to think about a thing, like, that's not expansive. That's not opening up a conversation. That's not creating an environment where we can all, like, learn from whatever the topic is. Like, that's why I say it's the death of journalism. Like, it's going to kill journalists, too.
It's going to kill everybody, myself included. I love that take and that point of view because it's just so real. And I also have a book coming out. So I just want to share this stupid little story with you because I've been thinking about it constantly, which is that put out a hot TikTok. Okay. Hot TikTok. And it was just a recap of this trip I had taken to a book conference. So I put it out on TikTok and I get this comment and it's some stranger. And they say, book was boring though. And there's going to be a ton of things you could say about my book, but, like, that's just, it's just not one of them. So I write back. I'm like, LOL, you wish, because why am I engaging with a troll? I don't know. But I was just like, I know this one's stupid. And they were like, no, the book sucks. You should have written something better. And my book is not for sale yet. So I write back, show me a picture. And now I'm fully in it with this troll. And a part of me is sort of like, oh God, what am I doing? But I was like, show me a picture of my book. And they write back like, I refunded it because it was so bad. And I was like, my dude, it is literally not for sale yet. And the reason why this has stuck with me so much is because she fully went in without even a Google, but, like, they don't even care that it's me because they don't even know what I'm talking about. And yet we're so committed to writing this thing. And I was just thinking, like, what if he had said, I'm making it a he, but what if he had said an adjective that means more to me that would have hurt my feelings? Would I have spun out? Would I have thought, oh, they have a copy of the book and it really is bad? Like, and it is exactly what you're saying, which is like, you can't even put up a video of like went to a book conference without someone trying to make me feel like my whole book is worthless without even knowing who I am.
I'm also just like, if you can't write your own book, like, I don't want to hear about it. Like,
yeah.
For as much time and energy as it takes to actually write a book, I'm like, this is all you can write is just in the comments section. And this is what you have to say. Like, meh.
Totally. And also, you didn't read the book. I was worthy of 7 messages about the book sucking. So the idea that like, yeah, it sucks for my day-to-day basis, but that any creation will be getting trolled. Any journalism will be getting trolled. Anything you say will be getting trolled. And mm-hmm. that this will be death to opinions. This will be death to information. This will be death to the desire to wake up and even want to share and engage with your community.
It's really vulnerable. I don't think enough people talk about the vulnerability of what it is to kind of put your heart out there in bound form.
It's so true. Which leads me to my next question for you. What is one of the trolling comments you remember, and would you like to take this space and this platform to absolutely roast them just for funsies?
Part of me is like, no, because they don't live in my mind. Like, they don't get the power.
I love that.
But what I will say, like, for my journalist stuff, absolutely not. If I do engage with trolls, usually it's like, hey, thank you so much for reading it. Or, hey, thank you, but I actually don't believe that you read it based on this comment. So please go back and read. Learn how to read. Read it, and then we'll have a conversation. That sounds
That's
great.
Nice. Yeah.
That being said, a time that I was trolled that I feel like sticks out the most to me was not about journalism at all. It was a video that was put up of me at a protest during the Capitol Hill occupied protest when we did the blackout. Somebody from Antifa came and like videoed the perimeter, which was, I think, even a little invasive for what we were trying to do, but okay.
Yeah.
So guess who we got trolled by?
Who?
Donald Trump. And I was like,
the time, sir, you should not be scrolling. At that point in time, you should have been like, you know, reading some documents or something, doing something. Wow. What did he say?
Oh, I mean, what do you think he said?
What do I think he said? I mean, also, he hates journalists. He made fun of people for how they looked, or did he talk about how you are violent and dangerous? Those are my 2 guesses.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. For me, it was like a little bit of a different moment in that, like, I'm kind of used to being trolled as a journalist because why not? That's sure. People's hobby. Like, they're like, ooh, let me get some popcorn and troll Reagan today. Ooh, 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 super fun. But like, in this case, I wasn't actually there in the capacity of a journalist. I was there as an activist doing this disruptive thing, holding a grief circle and whatever. So no, I wasn't really expecting to be trolled and not by him at all. Because I'm also like, apropos of nothing, like,
yeah,
you know, go,
sir,
go do something else.
That is so wild. Okay, this feels like a good time to take a quick break. Sibling fights are unavoidable, but what if every fight you had was under a microscope on a global scale? That's the reality for brothers Prince William and Prince Harry. They were each other's closest friends and allies since the death of their mother. But that all began to crack as they married and took wildly different approaches to their royal duties. Wondery's podcast, Disintel, is hosted by comedians Sydney Battle and Matt Bellassai. Each episode unpacks one of pop culture's most iconic celebrity feuds, and they recently took a deeper look into the real reason William versus Harry started. It's actually much bigger than these two brothers, stretching back into the history of the British monarchy. Did their feud start with the royal family's mistreatment of Meghan Markle, or was it something that started much earlier? Follow Disintel on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. I started this podcast because I have been obsessed with memoirs my entire life. And I can't believe it, but I got to write my own. And it comes out on June 4th, and you can order it right now. The book, you know, I was asked to describe it, and I said, it is an absolutely harrowing, traumatic memoir, but funny. So if that sounds good to you, order it. Let me give you some topics that are in this memoir. A female best friendship breakup. How I got my break into Hollywood. When I found out my dad was not my real dad. The time I dated a magician. Are those last two related? Who's to say? Read the book. Growing up in Utah. Growing up around cults. How I got into therapy. Listen, I could keep going. Each chapter title is a different woman's name in my life. Some are heroes. Some are motherfucking villains,
But you know what? A villain and a hero, what are both of those things? A leading role. And we do love women in our leading roles. So pre-order the book. It matters a lot. I linked everywhere that you can buy it in the show notes, but you know, go anywhere. Also, I am reading the audiobook personally. So I'm personally narrating it. So if you like this podcast, get my longest podcast ever. And the audiobook is also available for pre-sale everywhere you get audiobooks. And thank you so much for listening to this podcast. You are the reason I got to write a memoir. So thank you so, so much. Okay, let's dive back into the episode. Okay, next question. When you read a book and you set it down, you think to yourself, like, dang, that was a really good book. What are three qualities that book probably had? Like, what are three qualities a book has to have for you, Reagan, to think this is a good book?
It made me literally laugh out loud, but it also made me tear up. You know, there was some poignant moment where I was like, yes. Ooh, that author really got me. I'm in my feels. And I cared about the characters.
I love that. Okay, here's the twist. Do you think your book has those qualities?
100%. Next I'm like, question. Do I get to ask you questions ever? Like,
would you like to? You can. Make it fair. If you want to dig in, I'm ready.
What stood out to you about this book? Like,
you know, it actually made me think of in the pandemic when, and I'm like giving a little laugh because there were these books that white people, I say this lovingly, were like, I gotta read this book. Mm-hmm. One of them was White Fragility.
Oh yeah, Robin DiAngelo. She lives here too. All the Seattle people.
Wow, y'all, Seattle just has it on lock. And I just remember White Fragility a lot. And I remember some others where they became like the books to read. And it is just my personal taste and preference, but your book and Amber Ruffin's You'll Never Believe What Happened to Lacey, which are just like crazy stories about racist things that happened to her sister Lacey. And they're very funny, but you know, deeply racist. And I think like these two texts are what I wish I could replace books like White Fragility with, because I just think if you are going to enter someone's mind space in a way that matters and has impact, the humor and the humanness, you know, less lecturing, more human, which is like all over your writing, even though obviously you're a journalist, but not everyone thinks of journalism as having like that human character inside it. And that's what stood out to me the most.
Oh, I'm so glad I asked. Thank you.
Gosh, I'm glad you like the answer. You just thrown your book, walked off the podcast.
Okay. Mic drop.
Mic drop. Yeah, that would be wild. I'd be like, okay, well, like and subscribe. Okay. Question 8. What do you wish you could change about journalism right now if you had one magical wave your wand moment?
Oh, just one thing? The myth of objectivity.
Interesting. So that everything really is subjective.
Yeah. I mean, I think everything really is subjective anyway already. But if we like are putting together this myth of objectivity, like that's an actual attainable thing. Like, I don't think that that's really helping. I don't think it's working for journalism.
I think it backfires all the time, especially with places like CNN or MSNBC, who will have conservative sites say like, you're liberal leaning or you're this. And then in this wild effort to be like, no, we are objective, they will then seek out extremely conservative stories and voices and give them this giant platform as a way of acting like they are balanced news, when in reality, you've just purposely went for this. It wasn't the actually balanced story. Meanwhile, Fox News never does stuff like that. And mm-hmm. they don't care when you call them, you know, conservative news or whatever.
They're like, go on with their business.
Yeah, yeah. And it ends up creating a larger imbalance all in the name of objectivity. That actually reminds me of, so I used to work for Jon Stewart, and people always talk about his interviews being like the best. And especially on The Problem with Jon Stewart, he did these long form interviews. And in this one about trans rights, one of the big headlines was, this is a better interview than any journalist has ever done. And while there's a lot to unpack there, at the core of it, John is a comedian. So he's just actually going for the truth from his point of view with his opinion. And he doesn't have to thread this myth of objectivity because he's a comedian. He's not a journalist. And it ends up giving you the best interview possible because we have opinions and thoughts and feelings, and like that's what leads to a good interview. Would you say that's true as a journalist, or are you like, you're a comedian, shut up?
No, I think that is journalism. And like, honestly, for the last couple of years, I've been having a really difficult time distinguishing between what's Saturday Night Live and what's like actual journalism.
especially
from 2016 on, I would say, because things got really surreal in real life. And then I was
absolutely.
Like, ooh, I don't know. We're in a parody.
It's death to satire because you can't satirize it, because the truth goes further than comedy could. To comedically go there, it's like no longer funny. It's just, it's so sad. Okay, question 9 and 10. Here we go. This is the run out. In the back of your book, you have book club questions, and I love a book club. So I have stolen two of your questions in the back of your book, and I'm going to ask them to you now. If you could have dinner with five people, alive or dead, who are they? Why them? And again, this is in your book. What's the vibe of the party?
Oh, okay. So we're going to Tavern Law. There's this like little like awesome speakeasy situation. So we have to like go in through a wall, and they make cocktails where you could be like, I want a rum-based Afrofuturism, like something that tastes like the sunset, and they'll like make you a cocktail.
Amazing.
Yeah, so we're definitely doing that. It's going to be Michelle Obama, obvi.
Yes.
Ooh, bell hooks, Fannie Lou Hamer, James Baldwin.
Yes.
And my dad, because there's no way he will believe I had dinner with these people.
Like, are you talking? Are you getting into it? Or are you just like having drinks, jokes, roasting? Or are we like getting in depth with bell hooks?
It's the whole spectrum. We're going to laugh. We're going to kiki. We're going to have our little like futuristic cocktails. We're going to eat really good food. People are going to tell their deep, intense stories. They're going to talk about their politics, their lives. Like, it's going to be like one of those nights you wish would never end.
Okay, final question. What did you learn about yourself from writing this book?
Oh, gosh. I learned a lot about myself, but I'm like, ooh, how much more do I want to share that's not already in the book? Well, one, I learned that I am a journalist. And that seems like such a like weird thing to say to someone who's been like a journalist for over a decade. But again, like this was a moment of deep cognitive dissonance for me stepping into this work. And I definitely felt, despite having a lot of support from people who wanted to see me succeed, who wanted to hear what I had to say and how I would cover certain things in community, I think I had a lot of internalized oppression around, I guess it's called imposter syndrome. I'm a Leo, so that's like usually not a thing that I like come up with.
yeah.
But yeah, I think that's really what it was. And I feel like in a lot of ways, like the process of getting to a place where I have this body of work as a journalist has been a cure to imposter syndrome.
That is really, really beautiful. Reagan, thank you so much for coming on. Tell people the date your book comes out and your favorite way for people to order your book.
Yeah. So it comes out March 26th. We're going to be having a book launch party at Elliott Bay Books here in Seattle, 7 p.m. Come through. It's going to be so lit. I'm going to be in conversation with Tim Lennon and Jen Soriano. Whoa. It's going to be so fun because I am kind of like really feeling the book club aspect of things. So I'm going to model that for y'all. We're going to do a real life book club.
Love that. I love that. And are you going to the Tavern Speakeasy afterwards or what?
Low key, if I can get a reservation.
Okay. And what's your favorite way for people to order and purchase your book?
So you can definitely go to the Vervolta site. It's, or go to Hinton Publishing, and you know, my book's on their list and you can get it from there, because that way it goes directly to the person who's going to be publishing it.
Love it. We'll link it in the show notes.
But you can also get it anywhere.
Yeah. Okay. I love that. Reagan, thank you so much for coming on. Last question. You got any handles to drop? Any hot follows for us to follow? See you not talking back to trolls, get inspired, you know, all that.
Yes. You will never see me talking back to trolls other than like, thanks for, you know, not reading.
Yeah. Come to my account for that, you guys. As I lose my mind.
Yeah. But catch me on Instagram at Reagan EJ Jackson. There's some really cute content, and I'm going to just be like kind of dropping some gems and doing some real, real chats about like this book process, because I know, especially for a lot of folks who are aspiring writers or who want to know like what this process is like I want to demystify.
Oh, I love that so much. That is, I would say, a minor theme of the podcast. It's not our main theme, but like it's a sub theme. Just how to tell your own story and get out there. That is so cool. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank
you so much for letting me read your book.
My pleasure.
A huge thank you to our podcast producer, Christina Lopez, our executive producer, Jordan Moncada, our sound engineer, Marcus Hom, and our associate producer, Jaron Padre. I also want to give a huge thank you to our incredible partners over at Pattern Brands, Paquetto, Gear, and Yield. They have amazing glassware and candles and tiny spoons. They help us make a stunning tequila cocktail with our other partners at Tinteo Tequila. We will link to all of it in the show notes. Everything is in the show notes that you have heard from this episode. And if you have any more questions, go to the Patreon chat lounge and I will see you there.